Welcome to the third recording of AmScan Lit, a Velvel podcast series which was initiated in the beginning of 2011. AmScan Lit intends to regularly archive the contemporary works of both emerging and established writers located in either America or Scandinavia. I'm Jacqueline Davis, recording from South Pasadena, California. I'm here with SoCal writer, editor, and curator Harold Abramowitz. We plan to discuss his recent book release, Not Blessed, which was published in 2010 by Lafigue Press, a Los Angeles-based small publishing press and nonprofit organization founded by Teresa Carmody, Vanessa Place, Pam Orr, and Sarah Laborde. In their own words, Lafigue Press attempts to create aesthetic conversations between writers, artists, and readers, especially those interested in innovative, experimental, avant-garde work. The press intends, in the most premeditated fashion, to champion the trinity of beauty, belief, and bawdry. Harold Abramowitz's other books and chapbooks include Technique of Bandaging and Splinting, Dear Dearly Departed, Sunday or a Summer's Day, and Three Column Table. He has contributed alone and collaboratively to various literary publications and anthologies, including Fold Appropriate Text, PQ, Ixnay Reader, String of Small Machines, Area Sneaks, A Sing Economy, The Physical Poets, Volume 2, Moonlit, Sidebrow, and Sand. Abramowitz co-edits the short-form literary press Eohippus Labs and co-curates the experimental cabaret event series Late Night Snack. He also writes and edits as part of the collaborative projects Sam or Samantha Yams and Unfo. Also, Velvo has recently invited him to co-edit our In Its Own Right project, and Velvo Press is publishing all three parts of House on a Hill, translated into Swedish for the second Poetic Duo series. Currently, Abramowitz is working on a collection of 86 short stories that are all 2 pages long. Not Blessed is a singular recurring story that has been constructed by following one narrative rule or constraint, making it a 21st century Olympian literary experiment. Abramowitz created Not Blessed during the month of February, reconstructing the same story for the month's 28 consecutive days. The story is simple and complex, both familiar and unfamiliar, like a memory that is both not yours and yours simultaneously, perhaps even like something or someone both desired and despised. I have read this book in a number of different settings over the past year, in my apartment, on an airplane crossing the Atlantic, on a peaceful park bench in Los Angeles, in a windowless room at my mother's house. Every time I read Not Blessed, I discover a sentence or thought or axiom that seems even more important to the overall scheme of the text than before, such as, he remembered the rule about rules, he remembered that the rules need not necessarily apply, he was lucky that way, or, one day, while taking a healthful walk along a quiet path in the meadow, he noticed another path for the very first time. The other road appeared to run parallel to the road he was on. How was it that he had not noticed the parallel road before? Or, his grandmother had forbidden him to enter the forest alone. Or, how could the policeman not know who he was? In one reading, the characters appear simple and eerie, in another reading, mythological and innocent, and then another, dark and foreboding. After reading the story provided in its subtle shifting forms, the story begins to take on a dreamy, trance-like quality. One can get lost in its placating rhythm. Even if the same dream is dreamt night after night, one's memory of the dream can shift over time. Events and characters can overlap into one another, bleed onto each other, leaving the specifics to be increasingly questionable and diluted. This work of literature can easily reflect the state of the world, and that the facts and events of everyday life are portrayed from various perspectives, from ranging points of entrance and departure, from numerous convoluted media sources. Daily information is often absorbed in a repetitive, compulsive fashion, much like calculated propaganda. Not Blessed manages to be political without pointing fingers. It succeeds in introducing complex issues of truth versus non-truth, source, fact, and the notion of the rhetorical trickster and ideological phantasm. How do we see ourselves, and what is it that makes us who we are? If not our memories, then what? The main character in Not Blessed is a young boy who is sometimes portrayed as an older man having flashbacks of himself as a boy. There are other characters in the book as well, such as the boy's grandmother, a policeman, and a vague notion of a prominent or notorious figure. Perhaps various places and settings, such as village, meadow, road, house, could also be considered distinct characters since they also change over time and have their own set of shifting traits, much like unique personalities. When thinking of this set of characters, whether traditional or otherwise, are there any specific texts which helped mold your decision to gravitate towards this set of characters?
For this part of the book, the only real literary antecedent or specific text that molded or shaped that part of the story is certain texts from Saki, from H.R. Munro, the short story writer from the early 20th century.
In the beginning of your book, you quote the Bible, specifically Jeremiah 20:14-15, stating, "Let it not be blessed. Cursed be the man who brought tidings to my father, saying, a man-child is born unto thee, making him very glad." How does religion or spirituality influence your writing practice, if at all?
Religion or spirituality does and doesn't influence my work. And in this case, it does and doesn't influence the text.
Is it possible for you to explain this quote for those of us who are not aware of its biblical context or meaning?
The biblical context, I don't have an answer for. I mean, other than it's from Isaiah, and Isaiah is one of the prophets. But the quote has to do with certain ideas of gender that I was working with in the book. Because the book has to do with a lot of it has to do with gender, and specifically ideas or images of masculinity. And that's what the quote really has to do with.
In Not Blessed, there is a beautiful fable which emerges within the structure of your story and stands apart in my mind about a lone hunter. The grandmother tells her grandson a story of a hunter who returns home after being missing for some significant period of time. There is a great front window that opens directly to the living room of the family house, and when the hunter finally returns home, he steps into the house through the big front window entering the living room. Was this particular story inside the story chosen for a reason? This image of a hunter walking through the window of his house is so immensely powerful, one cannot help but think that there is much more to it.
The whole writing of the book actually was inspired by my trying to remember this story. Actually, the whole thing is the actual process of writing the book was me trying to remember this story of the hunter. And this is the part that I remembered. And actually, the process of the writing of the book became actually trying to rewrite the story every night from memory and not being able to.
Teresa Carmody writes in her introduction to your text that Not Blessed consists of many contradictions. She writes, "There are, in fact, no constraints here, claims the narrator, and there is nothing more than meaninglessness. Why would the narrator claim the absence of a constraint so obvious as the repeating story motif unless, A, the narrator is acknowledging, indirectly, his own unreliability, B, the story's repetition does not meet the strict definition of constraint as defined by leading authorities, or C, this is yet another line of deliberately misleading propaganda. There isn't one apparent answer, and the claim of meaninglessness is likewise specious. If this story truly doesn't mean anything, why does the narrator keep compulsively remembering it? And what of its archetypical qualities? A boy, a grandmother, a policeman, the woods, a road with its parallel other. There is also the contradictory title, for blessed is a word with generally positive connotations, a positiveness which isn't negated by mere use of the word not. To be not blessed is not nearly as damning as being cursed, though the curse follows close behind, as noted in the book's epigraph from Jeremiah. In creating a text that is not just one story, as the story itself states, but instead 28, along with other structural contradictions which show their face over time, what is your intention in creating a text in a way that questions itself to such a degree?
The answer is that what I was attempting to do, I think, is create multiple texts. I mean, on some level, every bit of the text is actually a text that's being created.
When choosing to write Not Blessed according to your self-designed constraint, did you run into complications when following through with your idea, or was the outcome otherwise?
The outcome, it actually helped. It helped me, and because the constraint, even though it's not an orthodox constraint, was part of the process. So it actually turned into the final product on its own.
Can you tell us more about your background and literary ambitions?
It's a difficult question because at the moment, or in general, I don't experience my writing in terms of my background. I try not to think about my background.
Do you have any opinions about writing as a way to empower specific individuals or bring current issues that such individuals encounter into the spotlight for further examination or to reach a resolution?
I think there are a lot of issues around writing that need to constantly be focused on. Ideas around normative writing processes, what is allowed to be written. the ways in which writing is produced. Working through those issues is extremely empowering for writers and figuring out where one stands in those ways.
What socio-political issues, if any, were present in your mind before or during the construction of Not Blessed?
Patriarchy in all its forms.
Harold will now read chapters 9 and 10 for the audience.
9. Yes, I have often been guilty of fixating too intently on people, on personality, despite how many times they have let me down, and people in general. I have observed them often enough to know. There is a fire that burns inside of us, burns inside each and every one of us. Early on, I was, I admit, insecure. More insecure than I am today, obviously. I was never certain how people would react to me, to my work, to the way I looked. I was a success, yes, but inside I had my doubts. I eventually came to a realization, though. I finally realized that the people I needed to be there for me would indeed be there for me. After I realized this, I continued to be fascinated with people, but only in the most superficial way. It is better to walk than run, I have been told. And most of the time, things are far better than they appear to be. I also smoke too much. To be frank, I could have used my time more wisely. I could have taken greater pains. Still, an increasing part of me continued to strive towards being better, towards being something bigger than myself. I decided I would try and exercise on a regular basis. It was spring and it was raining. The spring rain was very pleasant in its way. My grandmother had raised me single-handedly. I'd been raised by my grandmother in a small cottage near a road that led to a village in one direction and to a mountain stream in the other direction. There were only one or two other farms in that part of the country. I can still see myself as a boy taking long and healthful walks along the road on warm summer days. At night, my grandmother would tell me stories, and in the daytime, I would wander along the road and repeat her stories to myself over and over again. One day, as I was walking along the road, I noticed, for the first time, another road off in the distance that seemed to run parallel to the road I was on. I remember thinking it strange that I had never noticed this parallel road before. Although there didn't appear to be any way to reach the parallel road, I decided to try and find a way to cross over. That day I walked much farther than I had ever walked before. I followed the road to the edge of the forest, and then I stopped. My grandmother had forbidden me to enter the forest alone. I could see the neighboring farm in the distance. I remember sitting down on a large rock, a sort of boulder, and burying my face in my hands. Then I heard leaves crack and heavy footsteps, and when I looked up, I saw a policeman standing over me. The policeman asked me my name and where I'd come from. I stood up and shook my fist at the policeman. I was very angry that the policeman did not recognize me. In fact, I had spent my entire life in and around the village. In fact, my grandmother, before her death, had been well known in the village and all around that part of the country. 10. If his hair could have been styled any more appealingly, then he would certainly have had it done that way. But still, the old doctrines were demanding, and the worries too. The worries were demanding, and the admonishments. The admonishments were worrisome and demanding. And then there were the portents. For instance, a storm was coming. People would have to run for cover. But he loved to exercise for health and fitness, or for the greater good. And he considered himself to be an extraordinarily lucky man. In fact, it was often said there was an angel sitting on his shoulder. His exercise regimen was good and healthy and helped to keep him fit and trim. It was spring and it was raining. And there were worries and there were flags and banners and trees all along the boulevards. The smallest amount of dye, though, might have sent a very powerful message. A roguish words, the words of a rogue, a roguish look, perhaps, but in a good way, or better yet, a new coat and hat. Still, as it was, every word had a particular taste, had a particular value, or, to be clear, how one hangs his coat, or the way one wears his hat, or how one looks at things. It was spring and it was raining. The air was very wet and cold and damp. The trucks would soon be moving out of the city. His camping chair, the flags and banners, the loudspeakers, everything else would soon be on their way out of the city. And what a difficult thing it was for him to end his day in such a state of mind, to end the day in such a state of mind with such melancholic thoughts. He'd always been meant for good things. The spring rain smelled fine, and he was having his hair cut, dyed, and styled. It was, in fact, a brand new day, and they'd approached him with questions about the weather. It was also good and clear, the water, the rain, in the back of the car, or in his office, or at a meeting. But those were the types of things that happened to good people once in a while. The air felt especially clean that morning. He woke up feeling wonderful. There was something on the ground. He bent down and picked it up. He'd been raised single-handedly by his grandmother. He'd been raised by his grandmother in a beautiful house near a road that led to a mountain village in one direction and to the edge of the forest in the other direction. As a child, he had spent many idyllic days exploring the road that ran near his grandmother's cottage. One day, as he was taking a healthful walk along the road, he noticed for the very first time another road that seemed to run parallel to the road he was on. However, there did not appear to be any way for him to reach the parallel road. Suddenly, a boy who seemed to be about his age appeared on the parallel road. One day, another boy who seemed to be about his age appeared on the parallel road. But try as he might, he could not reach the other boy. He'd thought at first that this other boy could potentially be a new playmate or friend. He had never had a playmate before. He had never had a friend before. The boy walked along the road that led to his grandmother's cottage in one direction and to the edge of the forest in the other direction. That day, he walked farther down the road than he'd ever walked before. The boy sat on a hollowed-out log by the roadside and buried his face in his hands. Then he heard leaves cracking and heavy footsteps. The boy looked up. A policeman emerged from the forest and gathered the boy in his arms. The policeman asked the boy his name and where he'd come from. The policeman asked the boy his name. At first, the boy was relieved, and then he was angry. The boy was certain that everyone in the village had heard of his grandmother. After all, she had been a very prominent person. In fact, she had lived in a cottage by the side of the road her whole life.
Many thanks, Harold, for taking the time to meet with me this evening in South Pasadena.
Thank you, Jacqueline.
Visit www.velvel.se for upcoming AmScanLit podcasts. Thank you for listening.